Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Phyllis Pricer with the Higher Dimension. Sorry, we ran into a little glitch tonight, and that's why we're not quite on time. But we are here, and that's the main thing. And I'm looking forward to talking to you this evening. And tonight we have a wonderful guest with us, Dr. Will Horton. Will, welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Dr. Horton is a preeminent hypnotherapist. He's got a PhD in hypnotherapy. He is a specialist, one of the best in the country, on drug and alcohol addictions and hypnosis to release that. He's also written several books. One of them, his most recent, is it Mind Control?
Yep, Mind Control, How to Get Others to Do What You Want.
Oh, would I love that. Hello. All parents, tune in, put on your ears, and record this one. All those who are having trouble with their bosses, listen. So I am anxious to learn, just as they are, how to do this. It's been a long time coming. I know you've been working on this book for a while.
Yep, I've been working on it a couple of years.
Oh, wow, a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, like a lot of people, I kept changing it.
I know. Life keeps changing us, and so we change with it, right?
Right.
Excellent. Okay, well, tell me a little bit about it, or tell a little bit about yourself and how you came to bring out this particular book and what brought it about and what's it all about and some helpful hints on what we can do.
Well, really, as you pointed out, I've been a hypnotist for 20 years. I have a doctorate in clinical psychology.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, after hypnotizing probably 15,000 to 18,000 people one-on-one.
Wow.
And then another 50,000 or so in groups.
Uh-huh.
You know, I found most people were very interested in this kind of information, like mind control and how your mind works and secrets of hypnosis. And it's very rarely is it ever presented in a format where people can understand it very easily.
Okay.
So I wanted to put it together as in a format that would make it very easy to understand.
Okay.
And so I took, basically, as you know, I've been, teaching this kind of stuff for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And so I took, like, the basics of one of my courses, which is neuro-linguistic programming.
Yes, which I've taken and is a fabulous course. I use it all the time.
Which is, yeah, it starts to show you how people think and how to use that information.
Right.
And how to influence others. So that's where the book really came from. I took the course and made it into a pretty easy-to-read book format.
Uh-huh.
And what it does is it, you know, mind control, you know, how to get others to do what you want is kind of a strange title. But really, it's about learning how people really think and how you can really influence people. And it's, you know, it's not as difficult as people make it out to be.
Right.
It's people operate on a very simple level, to tell you the truth.
Well, yes, they do, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's like salesmen know, the number one thing about sales is tapping into an emotional need.
Exactly.
Right.
Precisely.
Very small percentage of the population buys based on price.
Exactly.
90-something percent will buy based on an emotional response. And then what you'll do is, you know, that's a subconscious response. And then what you'll do is use your conscious mind to justify it.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Like I remember buying a car. Because mind control is all about subconscious communication, communicating at the subconscious level.
Exactly.
Yeah, because like I use the example one time I bought a car, because I just wanted the car. I made the decision, bought the car.
Right.
After I bought the car, then I did my research and found out like whatever it was, Motor Trend Car of the Year, and won these awards, and then I could justify it.
Your choice.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what most people do. And if you understand that, like, you know, some of the best people at, if you want to call it mind control, are or subconscious communication and influence would be, you know, salesmen and people that write advertising.
Well, you know what's so cute now is right now, to supplement my income, I am a car salesperson. I don't think you know that.
No.
I started 2 months ago.
Yeah. In fact, you know, one of my first books was called Selling Yourself to Others. How to Selling Yourself to Others. the new psychology of sales. And I use the example in the book of a guy who understood this, and he was a car salesman. And when someone would walk in about looking for a car, obviously if you're walking into a new car dealer, you're looking for a car.
Right.
So everybody always says, oh, looking around or whatever they say. But what this guy would always get someone to do, you know, after they say, oh, I'm just looking around, he'd say, let me ask you a question. You know, especially if it was a guy. Was there a car you really liked? What was your favorite car? And then he would elicit from the person certain words about, oh, I had this really sweet 1968 GTO. Well, what was it about the GTO you liked? Oh, and the guy
was like
how it felt and, you know, the way it made him feel and this and that. And then he would take that information and link it to some kind of car that he was trying to sell.
Exactly.
And this guy had a killer close ratio on people, you know.
Uh-huh.
And because what he was doing was subconsciously communicating.
Right.
Like he said, there was a guy came in and said that, you know, that he was, his favorite car was something from the 60s, one of those muscle cars, which they don't make anymore.
Right.
So he started talking to him, and the guy was selling Nissans, and originally the guy came in to look at something like a minivan.
Right.
And he started talking to him and found out, you know, his favorite car was this. The guy ended up buying a Nissan Maxima. Because he kept, you know, as he elicited that, he figured, well, if that's the kind of car you like, you know, this is a sports car, but it's also a sedan, you know. How many kids do you really have? Well, just two. Well, come on, where, you know, can you use this? And,
yeah.
It was interesting. And he was just using what the guy really wanted.
Well, you feed back to them what they feed you. It's what it is you listen. And, you do feed back to them what they want. And you help them justify what it is they want to spend.
Right.
But you also do it in a respectful manner. There are some people that are extremely disrespectful in selling cars or anything else. And that's not how I operate, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, it's and they do teach you this now. It's really, you have courses you have to go through to learn how to do this. So that's why I'm so fascinated about this, because I find it just a whole challenging new world.
Right.
But go ahead with what you're saying, the neurolinguistic programming being so important.
It gets into, you know, how people really think. And, you know, when, like as a psychologist, I can tell you, you know, it spends years teaching theories on why people do things.
Right.
And that's fine. I mean, and there's, that's good information. But underneath it all, people's brain operates on very simple systems.
Right.
Because you only have five senses. Your sight, your sound, your hearing, your sense of sight, sound, hearing, taste, touch, right?
Yep.
So we call that visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, and gustatory. That's
right.
It. That's the only information your brain can process. Everything you do has to go through those senses.
Right.
So if you find out how a person, and what's interesting, in our culture, people mostly communicate visually, auditory, or kinesthetic.
Right.
You know, some people will tell you what they're looking for. Well, that's
right.
What I'm looking for. It needs to look like this. It has to, you know, be the right color.
Yeah.
Got to just grab my eye. And that's a visual person.
Right.
And if you talk to a visual person about, you know, the sound system,
that's
or
the
how the car
hold.
Sounds, or the feel of the car,
yeah.
They're not listed. They literally don't hear you.
Right.
Right? Or an auditory person, I want a car that sounds this way or do this. And, you know, think of the kids' cars now when they, you know, they soup up those little cars.
Right.
But they have that, they'll have that sound.
Now, I know. I was just with a guy the other day, and he said, I just have to hear the sound of the motor. I'll tell you whether or not I want it.
Yeah.
And he turned on the car. And I said, well, I'd like to show it to you. I'd like to demonstrate. No, you don't have to. I just will listen to the motor. And it turned over and it purred. His words. And so he's now trying to buy the car. So
right.
You're absolutely right. And we tend not to listen to people.
No. And what will happen, you'll use whatever you are,
visual, yes.
Auditory, or kinesthetic, and that's why you'll make that instantaneous connection.
Right.
Someone that communicates the same way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And so the people that understand that, that's the first level, if you want to call it mind control, I don't know. I like mind influence.
Yes.
Is understanding how people really communicate. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, you're visual and I'm kinesthetic. If you know, right. I'm kinesthetic, it's easy for you to use well, we'll just dig in there and get our hands dirty. I want you to take it for a drive, you know.
Right.
Crawl under the, you know, car, and that would get, you know, if I was kinesthetic, that would, yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And as long as you understand that, that's all that matters.
Right. Exactly.
And if you communicate that way, then you're communicating it at not just the conscious level about
but
what
I want. But the subconscious.
But the subconscious, which is not only am I hearing you, I'm really hearing you.
Right. You're absorbing it.
Right.
Okay. You're becoming one with.
Right.
Yes. I think that's absolutely fascinating. And that's one of the lessons that we don't learn today is how to listen so well to people. And you're right. So many people do not close, whatever it is, whether it's trying to convince your children to do homework or anything else. And the thing is, it's not just for business, but it can be used on the home front, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Or in personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well,
why some relationships are so good, because the one person listens
mm-hmm.
and feeds back to the other party, and it's not manipulation.
Oh, yeah. Well, or
not the kind of manipulation we think we're trying to get somebody to do something they really don't want to do.
Well, even...
Abusive, I mean.
Well, I don't know. Everything's manipulation.
Well, in that technical sense, yes.
But what's interesting is, you know, like when you say about interpersonal relationships, it's kind of funny. When someone's
yeah.
dating and you're in the court phase, whatever that is, when you're courting,
yeah.
you're much more flexible.
Absolutely.
You know, so if you're, you know, you'll work with the person to, you know, try to fit into their world, da-da-da-da-da. But
you
as soon as you're in the relationship and it's kind of stable, you'll go back to whatever you are. And
that's true, too.
This is where you'll get people that, like, I don't know, we were dating, it was great. He would hold my hand. Let's say a lady was kinesthetic,
yeah.
which has a tendency to happen. You know, he would hold my hand, and we would cuddle, and we would you know, do, you know, long walks on the beach, things like that.
Right.
And after they're in a relationship, guy quits doing it.
Right.
And then he'll say, look, I bought you this ring. I bought you a house. Look what I... Look. And she's
yeah.
like, but I don't feel loved. And he goes,
right.
but look. But I don't feel loved. But look. And then that's, you know, and then they end up in, if not divorce court, some kind of counseling.
Right.
And part of that is it's just a miscommunication. It's not that maybe the guy doesn't love her. I mean, who knows? But he's trying to show it, or she wants to feel it.
Or hear it, or feel it.
Yes, or vice versa. There's some people, they just want to hear it constantly.
Yes.
You know, but if you're a person, this happens a lot when it's an auditory person married someone who's not, they're constantly telling them they love them, because that's what this person would want, and the other person's like, quit bothering me.
Yeah. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, go buy me a ring. Something like that.
But,
so that's where people get lost in those communication issues. And so, you know, if you're communicating on the same level as, I always call them your target,
uh-huh.
then you're like we said earlier, you're on their communication, and it speeds everything up.
Well, I recently saw a couple who's been married, what, 40-some years, 50
mm-hmm.
years? And I will tell you, the way the woman knew her husband and dealt with him, the two of them, when buying the car, did such a dance. It was almost a verbal dance of choreography, if you will, of mutual respect and deferring. But dear, this is your car; you should do it. But you're going to be the one driving it. Da 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 da. And it eventually got the man got what he wanted. But the way the two interacted with such courtesy. And respect for the other was beautiful to behold. And
oh, yeah.
Here are people who have learned to listen to each other and react to each other and made a beautiful marriage out of it. I mean, as I said, I was in awe of how the two of them managed to work out their differences.
Right.
It was just absolutely fantastic. And as I said, I was almost mesmerized by this. And she had started the whole thing with saying, he'll get his way, he always does.
Well, if it was going to, yeah. Yeah, well, I remember when one of my internships, I had to do some marriage counseling, which I usually don't like to do, because to me that's the blind leading the blind. But
I hear what you're saying.
But the what was interesting is there was a couple, and one of the precipitating thing that drove them into counseling, and almost into divorce. I just was doing the intake, then they went to a social worker. But the thing is, the guy bought his wife a car.
Bought her what?
Bought her a car.
Okay.
But he absolutely got no feedback on her, from her on what kind of car she wanted.
Okay.
So even though it was going to be her car.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what a man does. And
yes, it's a man thing,
right.
He
was going to show her he loved her by doing this. And she wanted to, she was an auditory person. She wanted to talk about it, this, and this. And this guy wanted to just
go out and buy it.
Show her.
Right.
Yeah. And how much he cared. He bought her a really nice car, but it wasn't what she wanted.
Ah.
Like, it was just the, I just brought that up because it's the opposite of what you just mentioned.
Right.
So, kind of interesting.
Yes, it is. And she probably felt, he was shoving it down her throat, too.
Right.
Even though it was meant as a lovely gift. Well, it's the interplay, again, as people, and how well we want to be aware of our spouses. As you say, very often, once the courtship is over, everybody goes back to their corner and carries on as before, and there seems to be a lot, and the commitment, and it is a commitment to carry through and work with the other people is important. One of the things I found is, and I happen to just use birth dates, I found that I usually get along with people. I'm fairly social. But there was a particularly type of person that I could not communicate with. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong until finally I looked at their birth date. Now, if it was Sagittarius, which was my oldest daughter, and she and I always had kind of a ego struggle between us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not that she wasn't a wonderful girl, but she just was pretty much, her own way, and she wouldn't be open about it. You'd have to guess what her problem was. You know what I mean?
Right.
She wouldn't tell you. She wasn't like me. Well, this is what's bothering me. You had to pussyfoot around, as I call it, and try and figure out what it was. And if you didn't guess right, she wouldn't help you.
Hmm.
But, I also found that I was meeting this woman, the new person I'm working with, and we were just not meshing, okay? Just not meshing. So finally I said, what's your birth date? And she was just like my oldest daughter, a Sagittarius. I immediately rearranged how I was approaching her. Okay? Changed my whole attitude and demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And we get along just fine. Thank you very much.
Cool.
Okay? So it's a matter of also learning to adjust oneself or manipulate oneself. It's not always manipulating somebody else. It's very often, I think, arranging who you are to get relationships and to work with people and empower them and get them to do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fun part about learning this is, if you want to influence people, and that's what most people want when they're in a communication with somebody,
right,
is to influence either their behavior or their thoughts. First thing you have to do is elicit from that person not only, how they think, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, but, what are some of the values and beliefs that drive them?
And that sometimes is difficult in an office setting.
Right.
I can tell you that. It's interesting, and especially when some of the people are in overdrive, on stress. It's very hard to get them to rewind in the other direction, so to speak. And I find that an interesting situation. Another time I usually find that if I can't work well with someone, it's because they're a Virgo woman. And again, it's a matter of just, manipulating yourself and changing yourself in order to, and then they come along with you, by the way. Once that's established, I find it's a lot easier to slowly turn the ship around and guide them where you want them to go.
Right. Well, yeah, and part of this is you know, part of, like, mind control would be controlling your own.
That's what people don't understand. It's
right.
Learning how to control oneself.
Because if you're in control, what's the old saying? When you can keep your head when everybody else is losing theirs,
right?
You're automatically in control. But it, like what you just pointed out, if you're in control, it's easy for you, maybe not easy, but it's at least possible for that person to change their behavior,
right,
to get the response that they want from someone. Because
exactly.
It doesn't matter what you say, it only matters what the person interprets your meaning.
Right.
You know, it's the old, because people judge you by your actions, not your intentions.
Right.
What's the saying? We judge ourselves by our intentions, but
yes.
Everyone else we judge by their actions.
Right.
And so, exactly. You know, what this does is give you the, part of that is it begins to show you how to control some of your own internal process.
Exactly. And so you got this idea, and you, what are some of the recommendations that you give for helping others? And I'm so glad you pointed out that, first of all, one has to first control oneself.
Right.
Because that's the key. If you can't control yourself, don't even think about trying to get anybody else to do something you want them to do.
Right.
It'll end up in an ego-pulling disaster or taffy pull.
Yeah, and that's where you usually end up with, and most of us can relate to, I guess the only way to say it is, if you had one of your parents was kind of out of control.
Yes, yes.
And then, but they constantly tried to control you.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's the old thing about, you know, the parents standing there with a beer in their hand and a cigarette in their mouth, telling their kid they
don't,
can't do this stuff.
Yeah. And what is it? Do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, the first level is to, you know, begin to get control of your own inner states and figure out how do you personally communicate? Are you visual, auditory, or kinesthetic?
Right.
Because you know, most of us don't think about those kind of things.
Oh, no, it's so natural. We've been doing it all our lives.
Right.
Why would we stop and think about something that's as automatic as breathing? For us, that is.
Right, right. And so once you become aware of that, then it can open you up to, helping influence other people.
Well, I think that's just great. So once we get in control of ourselves, and sometimes this takes a lot longer than overnight, folks.
Right.
You bet. It's like an onion. You keep peeling, and you keep thinking, somewhere I got to get to the frickin' core of this being who I am. But once you do that, then what?
Well, and then, you know, one of the most important things if you want to influence other people is you have to have a clear idea in your own head what you want that person to do.
Exactly.
Many times, you know, it's like, well, I just want my kid to act better.
Which means
okay,
what?
Which means what? You know, and part of this is all going back to intention.
Exactly.
You know, what's your intention? And if you have a clear intention in your head of what you want, it's easier to communicate that with another person. Plus, then it gives you the feedback that, you know, that, because many times the people will do kind of what you want,
mm-hmm.
and but you weren't even aware of it because you didn't know what you were asking for. You know, in a business setting, you know, it may be a little easier with, you know, maybe trying to get a price on something or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But even, you know, most of our communications are what I would label soft communication.
Right.
You know, you're just trying to do this and that. And, you know, if you got a good, what's the word I want? Clear cut, I guess?
Clear intent.
Yeah, I'm kind of visual, so it'd be a clear-cut intention with the person. Then it's easier to begin to step into their heads and help them make those changes.
Right. It's important to know what you want, because if you're fuzzy on your thinking, as you say, on an unconscious level, they're going to pick up that fuzziness.
Right.
And they're going to reflect that fuzziness, and you're going to get upset, and they're going to get upset, and neither of you is going to get any, and you have stress, and you have attention, and you have, you know, fussing and fuming and sorts of nastiness.
Yeah, and once you begin to open up to how people think, you know, and you both one-on-one and in groups, then it makes the, I guess the only way to say it makes the world fun to look at.
Yes, Because you can detach yourself.
Yeah, and you can step back and go,
And you're not as emotionally wrapped up.
Right, and, you know, it's like when people are under stress, when they're scared and they're under stress, they'll make a little bit different choices. And
right.
That's why, if you're in fear, when someone's in fear, in a society is nothing but a big individual.
Right.
You go for the perception of strength.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's real strength as long as it's the perception of strength.
Right.
And someone that seems like they know what they're doing.
Okay.
Right. I can understand that. Yeah,
what
one of the biggest things police officers are taught when they're showing up at a scene, even if they don't know what to do, act like they know what they're doing.
Right, which is that swagger, as I call it.
People are looking for that.
Right.
And if you've ever been in, like, a bad situation where, you know, a lot of things are going on and the cops show up, that people look for them for that strength.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And so if you take it to a big macro level like society, like we've been going through some stuff with fear in our culture.
Right.
We go towards strength. And as Bill Clinton said, people will go for strong and wrong rather than right and weak.
Okay.
Even if you kind of know that what the person is doing isn't quite right, if they appear strong, it's more appealing.
Yes.
To someone that, even though you may know what they're talking about is right, but they appear weak.
Right. That is correct.
Yeah. And so that's why you can see it like at the macro level where, you know, the communicators that seem to understand this, they really hammer that kind of message in.
Okay.
You know.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know that you can call in and ask questions now. Dr. Horton is perfectly willing to answer any questions you have, any issues you have, how to handle a particular issue with people. Very often I'll get an email afterwards and say it was so interesting nobody wanted to interrupt. But, you know, we'd like to hear you breathing out there, just to know that you're there. And if you have questions, that's what you're here for. It's okay to impart knowledge, but we'd like you to interact with us because, you know, while we like teaching and love talking and so forth, we do want you to know that it's a show that is a participatory show. So if someone wants to call in and ask about a question on a certain situation, please feel free to do so. And I apologize for the interruption, but go ahead, Dr. Horton.
Oh, I was just going to say, because then one of the things you want to do if you want to influence people is you want to put them in the state where they're more receptive to whatever it is that you're trying to get them to do.
And how do you do that?
It's not as difficult as it sounds. The first thing you need to do is, again, have a clear-cut intention of what state you need that person to be in.
Okay.
You know, or what state you think would put them in a more receptive state to hear your message.
Okay.
And then you elicit that state in the person by describing it.
Hmm.
You know, because when your brain can, the way our brains work, if I start talking about, man, have you ever really been excited? You know, have
uh-huh.
you ever really been excited? I mean, how do you know you're excited? Where do you feel your excitement in your body? I mean,
I feel it, number one, sometimes it's like a burst of light in my head. Other times it's like in my stomach or my heart area. It depends, I guess.
Right. Well, see, and you just did what I was asking, which is to do it, if I start describing it, unless you've been super clinically trained, like as a psychiatrist or a medical doctor or a psychologist, you can't didactically sit back and analyze a state. You enter into it to start to describe it.
Right. Yes,
and
it's
so
emotional.
If I say, well, when I'm excited, you know, I see colors, I feel energetic, and then person goes, oh, no, here's what I feel. So they're entering into that state.
Right.
So now what you can do is begin to use that state to maybe, like if you're trying to get somebody excited about doing something, get them into a state of excitement, and then link that to what, like, let's say a project.
Uh-huh.
About doing that project.
Right.
And I remember back there, I had one really... It's pretty sad when I think back. I only think of two, really. High school teachers that could get you excited about doing a science project.
Right.
But they would talk about excitement and get you all excited, and then and then kind of lead you into doing this project.
Well, that's a good teacher.
And then they would talk about, well, I'm not quite sure what you'll discover when you do this, this, and this. But it was like, yeah, I can't wait to go find out.
Yeah.
Rather than say, okay, you got this assignment, you need to do this, this, and this, and write the paper and turn it in. And these teachers got, the students liked them.
Sure.
It seemed like the students did better.
Well, they did because they wanted to please.
Yeah, one that was he was a science teacher. Well, I had three, I guess, a science teacher, a math teacher, and then the guy that taught journalism.
Okay, I think we have a caller.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to BBS Radio. May I help you? Hello? Hello? No, somebody else. There must be another line beeping somewhere. I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay. And one of the ways you look at, if you want to call it influence or mind control, is look at the people that are good at it and figure out what did they do that makes them good. What did this teacher do that was different than the other teachers? Well, first of all, he put you in a good state before he gave you an assignment.
Exactly.
And I remember, in college, I got a triple major undergraduate. One of them's theater.
Ah.
And one of the directors was marvelous about getting you excited about even rehearsing. And because most theater people say, oh gosh, rehearsal. And this guy would get you all excited about rehearsing.
Absolutely.
Because he's like, this is where you get the chance to, as Robert Redford said, you're only as good as you have the guts to be bad in rehearsal. You're only as good on stage as you have as the guts to be bad in rehearsal when you're rehearsing.
Right.
And so he gets you all excited about rehearsing. And so what the result of that was is very few people miss rehearsals.
Well, yeah. How are you going to go on stage if you don't rehearse? I mean.
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised how many people don't want to rehearse.
Really? Geez, I would hate to get up on stage and make an ash of myself,
Yeah, but this guy, and people would get there early, and they would work on things by themselves, as opposed to, I always say, if you look at these at these master people that can get action out of people, another good one is coaches.
Oh, yes.
And
that's about standing coaches, yes.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was watching them. NFL game. I'm a big football fan. That was my sport. And I'm watching the game, and it was, what's his name? Bill Parcells.
Okay.
Right? And it's funny. You see him screaming on the sidelines, he's throwing stuff, and he's yelling at you and doing this, that's kind of what he does, right?
Drama.
What was interesting, they're in a close game, and I can't even tell you which one it was, and it was a close game. It was one of the Jet games. And the quarterback threw an interception, right?
Yep.
So the quarterback's walking off the field, right? Bill Parcells walks over to him, and you see this. And, of course, even the commentator, this should be interesting. What does Parcells do? Puts his arm around him, and you couldn't tell what he was saying, but he's probably saying, don't worry about it. We'll get the ball back. It's a team game, and then does the old football, slaps him on the butt as he walks by.
Uh-huh.
But he was smart enough to know that to get the response he wanted out of him, which was to come back in the game when they got the ball back and not be down, he couldn't yell at him.
Right.
And, it's that whole, those really good coaches, the people who can get people to take action, the people, that are listening. Think of the good bosses you've had.
Right.
They know when to yell. And that may get the response, or that may be the response you need with certain people.
Right.
But it won't work with other people.
Exactly.
And so I always say, find someone that can communicate, figure out how do they communicate. And going back to, one other thing is, I remember listening to Bill Clinton talk one time, and I still say he's the best communicator I've ever heard, or one of the best communicators.
Yes.
And he's given a speech, and he's up there talking, and he actually said, and not together, as we all look for the future. And then he says, what we'll see as we look into the future. And a few beats later, he goes, and this is what we'll hear as we all listen for the future.
Uh-huh.
And then he finally closed it after he said something else about, and this is what we'll feel when we're all pulling in the same direction.
Boy, he didn't leave much to us.
No. And it was so... It
subtle.
It made his speech come alive.
Right.
You saw it, you heard it, you felt it.
Well, and he covered the main point.
Yeah, and so he got everybody going with him, you know. So when you look at the good communicators, he'd be an example. Another one would be Tony Robbins. They know how to, you know, use all of your senses and how to motivate people.
Right.
And one of the interesting things when you watch a Tony Robbins, as opposed, you know, to a bad speaker, when he talks about motivation and he talks about excitement, he is so juiced up on the stage, it looks like he's vibrating.
Yes.
And you can hear it in his voice.
Right.
Because he knows that, you know, it's a clear-cut intention he wants out of his audience. He has to enter into that state himself, and
right.
Then he'll describe it. And so that's an easy way to begin to influence people, you know. And if you have parents listening, one of the missing ingredients is how many of us make something exciting and fun for our kids?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you can make everything exciting and fun, but you can make some things exciting and fun.
True.
And, you know, again, when you look at it, that seems to be the missing ingredient.
Exactly. That's part of it is this, and I'm thinking that there's so much that we can, using this knowledge, use in our daily life, whether it's within the own family or even strangers on the street. And one of the things that comes to me watching people interact, because I'm seeing people outside the medical field for the first time really interacting, and I consider hypnosis, by the way, a part of the medical field, because it deals with health and health, getting a healthy body and mind and spirit moving. But I notice, I lost my train of thought. That was great, wasn't it? Anyway, part of what I've noticed is that there seems to be a kind of a lackadaisical attitude in treating other people. It seems of like they're coming from a poverty consciousness, and it's like they lack and stuff. I don't know if I'm explaining correctly.
Right.
So when you want to talk to people, it's like there's not enough, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't enough sales, there aren't enough this, and it's always coming from a, there isn't enough, and you know, you get a little tired of that.
Right.
And
well, the other thing you notice is like, and I'll use Bill Clinton again, is he has a unique ability when he's talking to you to make you feel like you're the most important person in the room.
You know, that's what I heard about Henry Kissinger
Henry Kissinger could do it, even though, you know, you're talking, both of them super brilliant human beings. I mean,
yes.
IQs in the 160s and stuff like that.
Right.
Know? And yet when they're sitting, because of one of my martial arts teachers, right? He was in Arkansas back in the late 80s when Bill Clinton was governor, getting ready to run for president. And there was a martial arts tournament. And a big martial arts tournament, so the governor shows up because it was in the state capitol, and, you know, they'll do anything to press the flesh. And you're in Washington. You
do I hear a little cynicism
about.
Here?
Huh?
Do I hear a little cynicism here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's fine. But they said it was interesting. Bill Clinton showed up. First of all, everyone was convinced he took martial arts.
Really?
Because he took the time, probably before he showed up, to learn five or six names and some of the buzzwords and, you know. And,
cool.
And plus, you know, he could do some things like that. But they said, well, my teacher, who is a real hardcore, ultra-conservative kind of guy, said, though, that you, when he was standing there talking to Bill Clinton, he made him feel like he was the most important person in the room.
Cool.
And then he was watching
That's
Bill
important.
Clinton, you know, go down, you know, talk to five other people, and he did that with each person.
Yes.
And so...
That's a real gift, by the way.
Yeah, and what it is, he actually pays attention to the person he's talking to.
Yes.
And there's a guy that got people to take action for him. If you make other people feel important, you'll be surprised what they'll do for you.
Exactly.
You know, and too often we just try to get people to do things for us with no, you know, the old, what's the radio station, WIIFM, What's in It for Me?
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, if you keep that radio station in your mind, because that's what everybody's thinking when they're doing anything, is what's in it for me?
Huh.
At least at some level.
Yeah.
What's in it for me, my family, my company?
Right.
You know, whatever. And it doesn't have to be like financial or anything like that. Sometimes it's just like, this guy makes me feel good, or this lady makes me feel good about myself.
Huh.
And I'll do something for them.
But you know.
And maybe not, you know, especially the little interactions, like you just need a little favor. And we can think, you know, and
right,
we like...
Right, now you mention it, you know, there's this old saying that if you want somebody to do something for you, be very, very nice to them. It's like my mother said, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar.
Yes.
So what you are, if you want somebody to do something for you, you be nice to them. Not just when you want something, because then it becomes really fakey. But you be nice to them all the time, and then all of a sudden they'll find themselves doing some things for you that surprise them.
Right.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
This is a lot of fun because it opens the door on information that I know. Does that make sense?
Right.
But I don't think to use.
Right. Well, and what it is you just have to step back from the communication and look at the process. Right? Too often we're in the communication, we're thinking about the content. What are we communicating?
Uh-huh.
And that, in communicating or mind control, whatever you want to call it, we're in the content of doing it.
But right.
When you pull back and look at the process, then the content it can change, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And so whether you're getting somebody to buy a car, buy a house, get your kid to clean the room, the content isn't as important as the process.
Exactly. It's knowing the process. And once you become habituated with the process, then it becomes something that you don't think about, but you can pretty much incorporate into your life on a regular, steady basis without thinking about it and contorting yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to, you know, it's something we all do.
Right.
It takes it out of the level of doing it subconsciously and pulls it into the level of being able to do it consciously.
Exactly.
And sometimes, and they always say that if you do it enough, then it'll become unconscious. That may be true. I'm not quite sure, because I know that to stay in the process, you can't get lost in the content.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at the interactions, I'm trying to think of a good example of getting lost in the content. I don't know. My mind just went blank. Sorry.
Did you have a senior moment, dear?
Yeah. Oh, I know. One of the things, you know, we'll look at like politics. Right now, what's interesting is when you talk to the old politicians, and I was driving a lot, as you know, the last couple of days, so I was listening to radio, and they had a couple of the older politicians, and they said, you know, what's been lost is truly being able to disagree and yet communicate.
Yes, that's the...
Right,
I mean,
now
it's like you either my way or the highway.
That's right. And this guy had an interesting thought why that happened.
Okay.
And I agreed with it, because I thought that way before. Is one of the interesting things, and I'm not being partisan, it's going to sound that way, but when the Republican Party is run... A lot of the... people that go into politics in the Republican Party are business people.
Yes.
Business people think differently
yes.
than politicians.
Yes.
In other words, I'm running General Motors. I do not care if Ford hates me. It does not matter to me whether they like me or not.
Right.
But then they come into politics, if they carry that attitude into politics where you really do need to get a consensus.
Right.
Or you still have to communicate with the other side of the aisle.
Yes.
That, and basically what this, and he said, and the Democrats, they've done kind of the same thing,
uh-oh.
Probably in response, that ability to be able to, as Socrates would say, look for the level of agreement.
Right.
We all agree America should be safer. Now let's figure out how to do it. We can disagree about some of the little things.
Mechanics of it.
Yeah, but they won't even agree at that level.
Huh.
And he thinks it was because in the old days you had a lot of, well, you had lifetime politicians in both parties.
Yeah.
You know, Barry Goldwater, very partisan politician, but he was, a lot of his legislation was bipartisan.
Yes.
Because he could reach out and get a consensus.
And so now
it's
they
kind of an interesting
together.
Thought process. But, I mean, that's like stepping back, looking at the process. Where's and another way to look at this stuff, whether it's interpersonal communication, one-on-one, or group,
right.
is you can look at the where it's going well, and then
uh-huh.
you can also look at places it's broken down and figure out, okay, why is it broken down? What's going on here?
Right, and how do we fix it?
And how do we fix it, you know? So, to me, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't particularly care for politics, mainly because I worked on the Hill and I got to know a few too many politicians personally. Up close and personal, they all put their pants on one leg at a time. They just don't believe they do.
Right.
And they use either the right or the left leg, and they try to tell me there's another leg to use, and I don't believe them. But at any rate, I have to admit that the art of, what is it, negotiation?
Right.
Seems to be less. It's more of a bullying tactic and a punishing tactic, and you do as I say or else. And that's not how life is. Not if you want to compromise. And what happens is, if you get used to this and you try to do it with people of other cultures, what you have is what's called the ugly American syndrome.
Right.
And this is not going over real well.
Well, and when you take that attitude into the world market, you know, not just the
yes.
the world stage, then then you're running into more problems.
Uh-huh. You think?
You know, yeah, and so it's interesting, you know. And again, going back to politics, you know, when you look at the great, the people we consider great leaders of the last, you know, our lifetime,
right.
Ronald Reagan, John F. Kennedy and to me,
of
Bill
course.
Clinton, they were able to communicate all over the world.
Yes.
And they could disagree with you. Look at Ronald Reagan, right? Because I don't want to sound partisan about Bill Clinton. Ronald Reagan had all those wonderful meetings with the Soviets and got them to do things.
Right.
You know, because he could reach some consensus. You know, and even, and you know, Kennedy, even in the middle of the Cold War, with all the stuff with Russia and all the stuff going on, he always would say, but at the, what is he, his big thing is, at the easiest level, we all want a better future for our children.
Exactly.
Now, who would disagree with that? Russian, Arab, American, English?
Everybody.
No, everybody wants a better future for their kids. And they could reach out and try to do that, you know, and still disagree.
Yes.
You know. So it's just kind of interesting.
Yeah, I find it all fascinating. I'm wondering if there's been any training going on with people overseas, because I don't see it. You know, I don't see where they are reaching out. Everybody's becoming entrenched and hardened into their own particular little, it's sort of like, what was it during the Vietnam afterwards? They argued about whether the table should be round or square.
Right.
Or oval.
And the peace talks.
Yeah.
They spent 10 months designing the table.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
You know what I would have done? I would have thrown pillows on the floor, handed them a pad, and said, here, write on the floor.
Yeah. Well,
don't sit in a chair. If you can't agree on it, sit on the floor. And we all agree we have to sit somewhere. But, yeah, it doesn't make sense. And then it becomes a matter of ego pull. And ego, it comes from an ego standpoint. And that's when everybody starts really losing.
Right.
When it's all about the gesturing and the posturing, I guess it is, and
yeah.
not about the substance. I have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how many great politicians we have today. I don't see too many, at least not in this great city of ours.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we did. You know, in D.C., I've often been fussed at, but when we had a different mayor, Mayor Barry, as a matter of fact, and how could you elect him again? And how, Washington, the city of Washington seems to be blamed for politicians. That somehow, It's the citizens of this city, who, by the way, couldn't vote for many years in a national election. That didn't happen until the 60s, you know. We weren't allowed to vote. And they seem to say, it's all your fault. And I look at them and I said, who votes these clowns into office?
Yeah.
I said, you know, every 2 to 4 to 6 years, we send them back home. And by golly, you don't want them, so you keep resending them back to us. And you expect us to clean it up?
Right.
They don't come from here originally. And it's just fascinating. But, you know, a lot of them do know some games. But it's just that I just think there's a lack of... it's so much in your face now. It's not the delicate... Diplomacy.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure if that's our warning or not. I have a feeling it is.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. At any rate, it's been absolutely smashing talking to you. I've had so much fun.
And if anybody wants any
please.
More info on the book or anything,
yes,
you can go to
please.
My website at nfnlp.com. That's NFNLP, stands for National Federation of Neurolinguistic Programming. .com or mindcontrolbook, all one word, .com. That'll be up this weekend.
Fabulous. Well, again, Will Horton, thank you so very much.
All right.
And we look forward to talking to you all next week. Have a wonderful week. And, Will, we'll have you on again sometime.
All righty.
And we'll see what else we can do.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you. This is Phyllis Pricer from Multiple Pathways. I'm sorry. Website of Multiple Pathways and from the Higher Dimensions. We'll look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you so much. God bless and good night.